Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
I think it's safe to say that over the last 4 years, the pro-life movement has advanced legislatively, certainly in terms of public policy from the pen of a man that is being called, at least in terms of the outcomes, the most pro-life president to ever serve. Executive orders, well, they're good and they hold sway for exactly 4 years. And then what's going to happen to those next? But the question remains, what about things like the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act? Will it go anyplace under a Biden administration and the two houses of the legislature completely controlled by, let's just call it the party of abortion, because that's what it is, or the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act? What about that particular piece of legislation? Will it move forward? Will it have to wait? Will it die? Will it make it through and perhaps meet the president's veto pen? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about abortion legislation in 2021. Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life, joins us. Carol, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Todd.
How was 2020 for the pro-life movement legislatively?
We had some good success in passing pro-life legislation at the state level. We had maybe not so much success in Congress because we had Nancy Pelosi still running the House, but we had a president and an administration that was doing great work in protecting conscience rights and doing what they can to protect babies. So I would say overall it was a good year.
Carol, what specific pro-life executive orders did President Trump sign during his 4 years in office?
President Trump signed several orders and then had his administration following through and putting even more pro-life protections into administrative law. One of the very first thing he did when he was installed or inaugurated as president was to reenact the Mexico City policy. This is something that first started under President Ronald Reagan. It said that U.S. foreign aid dollars will not be used to promote or perform abortions in other countries, and it cannot be used to lobby to change abortion laws in other countries, and that we were just not going to use our international dollars to kill unborn children. Then he also enacted immediately an order on the United Nations Population Fund so that our tax dollars are not going to a UN organization that supports coerced abortion and family planning policies in China. The president reinforced, you know, laws that were already on the books to protect the conscience rights of people who do not want to pay for, participate in, or perform abortions. He issued an executive order to prevent tax dollars from going to organizations that promote or refer for abortion in the Title X family planning program. And then he gave his administration in the State Department, the Health and Human Services Department, several different areas, just gave them almost carte blanche. Do what you can or do what you need to through administrative law and what you can do without Congress to protect babies. And everything that was done in that manner was great, but then that means that the Biden administration can just go in and completely reverse it all and take it in 180 degrees direction, going toward abortion and promotion of abortion and nullifying what had been done administratively in the last 4 years.
What has changed now politically going forward in Washington that is going to make pro-life legislation a very difficult achievement.
We now have the abortion industry in a position to call the shots in Washington. They were strong supporters of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. We have Nancy Pelosi in charge of the House, and Chuck Schumer, even though it's a 50-50 Senate between Republicans and Democrats, Chuck Schumer will be pretty much running the show because Kamala Harris will be there to break any tie that will come up. The vice president votes when there's a tie in the Senate. So it's going to be a tough road ahead to try to get any legislation passed. I don't know that we will be able to do much. Our obstacles and our goals, actually, are going to be protecting laws that are already in place. So it'll be a difficult 2 years.
Do you anticipate attempts to gut or undo the laws that are already in place on the part of the House and the Senate at least the next 2 years?
Yes. There have been a lot of strong comments coming from leaders in the House and the Senate. They want to get rid of the Hyde Amendment. Joe Biden for years had supported it. And then when he was running for president, he changed his position and said that he would oppose the Hyde Amendment. That is the measure that has for 40 years protected our tax dollars from being used to pay for abortions through the Medicaid program. That will be one of their number one targets so that they have tax funding being used to promote and perform abortions.
If they can overturn the Hyde Amendment, prevent it from being added, then is that just the thin edge of the wedge for other forms of taxpayer-funded abortion?
The abortion industry and the pro-abortion Democrats in Congress are definitely going to go on the offense. They want to extend the ratification deadline for the ERA. Now, the ERA is a constitutional amendment that was presented by the Congress to the states for ratification back in 1972. Two-thirds of the House and the Senate said, great, let's amend the Constitution, put in equal rights amendments that women can be treated the same as men, and they passed it to the states. Needed 38 states to adopt the amendment before 1979, and they didn't get those states. They had 35. Well, then Congress tried to use with a majority vote in 1979 to extend the deadline, hoping they could get three more states. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that. But they are still trying to do it. We do expect strong efforts this year and or next, this session, to retroactively change the deadline so that they can get more states to adopt the Equal Rights Amendment. And the reason that we are opposing it is because if men and women have to be treated equally, a woman can stand up and say, I'm pregnant, I want an abortion. That isn't something that is available to men, so you're discriminating against me by not letting me get the abortion. And a lot of our laws currently protecting unborn children are going to fall under this constitutional amendment. So they're going to be trying that effort. There is also what is known as the Equality Act, and it's being billed as legislation that deals with sexual orientation and gender discrimination, but it has the language amending Civil Rights Act of 1964 that could take away the right of states and federal governments to prohibit taxpayer funding. It could create a right to demand abortion from healthcare providers. So using women's rights, Congress, I fully expect, will go after both of these bills, the ERA and the Equality Act, to force governments and the country to accept abortion. Because if you don't, you're discriminating against women.
With respect to the Equal Rights Amendment, is it possible for pro-life states to withdraw their ratification, make it more difficult for the proponents of that amendment to get the number that they need?
There have been some states that did withdraw their ratification after they realized that it was going to be used to promote and push abortion and abortion funding. And because the 7-year deadline that was created in 1972, ending in 1979, went by without getting the full 38 states. The states that withdrew their ratification have never really, that whole situation has never really been resolved. So if Congress they won't get the two-thirds vote, but they will try. I'm sorry, they're going to try doing it by majority vote. If they do get that, they will try to extend the deadline, and then it will probably be up to some court working its way up to the Supreme Court that will have to deal with what about those states that initially ratified it, so they might be counted in the 38, but now they want to withdraw that ratification. So those states actually are up in the air. Have they ratified it or not?
Carol Tobias is our guest. She is president of National Right to Life. What would the Equality Act, which soon-to-be President Biden has promised to be one of his highest priorities, what would it do vis-a-vis the pro-life movement? We'll find out next. What are the particular comforts of Lutheran theology and practice? Find out in my column in the latest Issues Etc. Journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Peter Slayton writes about growing up in a Christianity that was more about him and what he was doing, and finding in the Lutheran Confession a Christianity that focused on Jesus. The free online Issues Etc. Journal, issuesetc.org.
This is a message for pastors and lay leaders of Missouri Synod congregations. As we enter the last quarter of 2020, how are you doing and how's your church doing? What has the COVID lockdown done to your attendance and giving? In 25% of our churches, giving's actually gone up. So why are some churches struggling and others thriving? Here at LCMS Stewardship and the whole Office of National Mission Team, we have answers and we have help for you and your church today. LCMS.org/stewardship.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our Christian faith is under constant attack, and we must be proactive in keeping our children in the church. At Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, we believe that an education rooted in God's Word is one that stands against the very gates of hell. Nothing in this world is more important. Offering a rigorous classical Lutheran education, we provide in-person and live online remote learning opportunities for preschool through grade 12. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're discussing abortion legislation with Carol Tobias of National Right to Life. The Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod's Life Ministry advocates for the unborn, weak, and vulnerable. Check out their free pro-life resources at lcms.org/life, lcms.org/life. Carol, we talked briefly about the Equality Act a few minutes ago, but what would it do vis-a-vis the pro-life movement?
It would require healthcare providers to make abortion available. So they could go into hospitals and other ambulatory surgical centers and say, along with the appendectomies and the gallbladder removals and whatever else you might be doing in your facility, you also have to do abortions. And if not, then there will be violations of the Civil Rights Act. State and federal governments could be forced to provide funding for abortions. It would say, basically, you're discriminating against women if you don't perform and promote and pay for abortions.
What is the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, and is it capable of passing both branches of Congress and being signed into law by President Biden at all?
It should, but it won't be. The Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act says that once a child has reached the age of development that he or she can feel pain, currently the legislation says 20 weeks after conception, but we do have more scientific evidence coming out that it actually occurs earlier in the pregnancy than the 20 weeks. But once a child can feel pain, the abortion cannot be performed. An overwhelming majority of Americans agree with that. They don't support late abortions. They don't support abortions when the baby can feel pain from the procedure. So we think it's a very reasonable bill, and we've been trying to get that enacted for a couple of years, but there is no way Nancy Pelosi is going to bring that to the floor for a vote. Even if we could get the votes in the Senate, we will get a veto from President Biden. He is marching in lockstep with the abortion industry.
Tell us about the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act and its prognosis for this House, Senate, and presidency.
Well, this is one that I would actually hope we could get some success from in Congress. The Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act is exactly what the title of the bill says. If a baby survives the attempted abortion, that baby has to be given the same care and treatment as another child born under different circumstances, but at the same age. So if you have a baby at maybe 24, 26, 28 weeks being aborted and that child survives, the child would have to be treated the same as a baby that is just born prematurely at the same age. You don't have to do unusual circumstances or treatments for the aborted baby, but it does have to be the same kind of care that would be given to a baby born prematurely at that age. That it just makes so much sense. And if you talk to people about it, they would think, well, of course, why would you not take care of a baby? Even if the intent was to end the baby's life in an abortion, the baby survived to take care of him or take care of her. There is going to be, there was last year, and there's going to be again this year, a discharge petition so that if a majority of members in the House of Representatives sign the discharge petition, it doesn't matter what Nancy Pelosi wants. The bill would come to the floor for a vote. So we have a much closer margin between pro-life Republicans and pro-abortion Democrats in the House of Representatives because we actually did quite well in congressional elections last fall. We need a handful of Democrats to sign this petition saying that they would support legislation that you take care of a baby who survives the abortion. So we are going to be working on that very hard. Even if it passes the House and the Senate, if we can get it through, it still, again, would have to be signed by a President Biden. And I don't know that that would happen. But I think it's something that we need to work on, and it's a great educational tool for the American public to just for us to keep telling them, look, it doesn't happen often, but it does happen. Babies do survive the abortion, and we need to take care of them.
Do you expect to get support from pro-life Democratic lawmakers in 2021?
There are so few pro-life Democrats in Congress. There are two in the Senate that claim to be pro-life. Joe Manchin is probably our best chance at getting a Democrat to support pro-life legislation. He is a Democrat from West Virginia. The other is Bob Casey. I absolutely loved his father, also Bob Casey, but it was Governor Bob Casey of Pennsylvania. Unfortunately, his son, now a senator, has not been as friendly to unborn children as his father was. He likes to say he's pro-life, but, you know, we'll be working with him and our folks in Pennsylvania will certainly be encouraging him to support pro-life legislation, but I don't know where that will go. In the House of Representatives, most pro-life Democrats have either retired or been defeated by Republicans. We only have a handful there that might say they're pro-life, but it's a pretty clear-cut case in both the House and the Senate of your position on abortion by party.
In terms of the politics of the thing, Carol, do you think that in 2022 at the midterm elections, pro-life politicians might be able to further thin the margin in the House that pro-abortion advocates now hold and maybe tip the balance even in the Senate?
We were able to switch 14 seats in the House of Representatives from pro-abortion members of Congress to pro-life members of Congress. So the margin is much closer this year. You can be sure that I am going to be working very hard, doing everything I can with National Right to Life and working with, you know, other pro-life groups and all of our state affiliates to bring in that many more new members so that in 2022, Nancy Pelosi loses the gavel. And in the next year, 2023, when the new Congress comes around, we can put in a pro-life Speaker of the House. So, yes, the election next year in 2022 is definitely a possible way to take back the House, put it in pro-life hands, and pass some great pro-life legislation.
Has the pro-life movement been forced into playing defense for 2021?
Yes. Yes, at least at the federal level. We're going to have to be working very hard to stop some very dangerous pro-abortion legislation. We've got, hopefully, we can, you know, get enough votes in the Senate. And if the Senate does get rid of the filibuster so that it just takes a majority of the senators rather than 60 senators to pass legislation, that's also going to be very tough. So we are definitely on defense in the federal government, in Congress. At state legislatures, we had a lot of success in electing even more pro-life representatives and senators, and I'm expecting to see a lot of action from the states this year that will likely end up in the courts, but we may start seeing some changes just because of the new judges that have been confirmed by President Trump and the Senate.
Carol Tobias is president of National Right to Life. We'll post a link to National Right to Life on the Talk on Demand Archives page at issuesztc.org. Carol, thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
We're going to be talking about two somewhat related topics in the second hour of Issues Etc. on this Tuesday afternoon. We'll start out with a conversation on chastity with Dr. Joel Bierman of Concordia Seminary, and then modesty in dress with Katie Schuerman. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Concordia University Chicago is committed to keeping college affordable for all, and especially for LCMS Lutherans. We have scholarships available specifically for students who are LCMS members. This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, asking you to encourage your student to check out Concordia Chicago at cuchicago.edu. And if you are interested in supporting these scholarships, please find us online at foundation@cuchicago.edu.